Here's John Williams.
I didn't have the button turned up. Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here weekdays till 3. And on Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon on social media on WGN King John. And remember, our Mincing Rascals podcast was judged the best. In the city, it's the Lissagor Award winner for this year. Best podcast in Chicago, The Mincing Rascals, featuring Steve Bertrand, moi, Patty Vasquez, Justin Kaufman, our friends from the Chicago Tribune, or Eric Zorn, Krista McQuarrie, and the editorial cartoonist Scott Stantis. A combination of those folks sit with me each week, and we post a new podcast. Yesterday, we just put up a new one for you. If you have not heard The Mincing Rascals, download that for free wherever you listen to podcasts. We conclude each podcast, by the way, with a recommendation, something we're eating, drinking, listening to, watching, reading. My recommendation is Fear, the Bob Woodward book. A new installment from my book review will come your way in a minute. Incidentally, one thing I will not be recommending at the end of the podcast, cotton candy grapes. You've heard of cotton candy grapes? Cotton candy grapes are really super sweet grapes. And somebody had talked to me about it here on this show once before, or maybe it was on the podcast.
It was me.
Wow. So Brenda said, you've had cotton candy grapes before. And I said, no, I have not. But Violetta said, they're just all the rage. So Brenda was at the store the other day, and she brought home a big bag of them. And I had, by my recollection anyway, my first cotton candy grape. I cannot believe how much those taste like cotton candy.
Right?
Hokey smokes. And I got to tell you, I don't like it.
What?
That's not how I want to consume cotton candy. It's so cotton candy-ish. It feels unhealthy. It's a grape, but I can't believe that they got that much sweet and that they actually have the flavor of cotton candy in a grape.
I think it's great. Also, you can put them in the freezer and they freeze up a little bit, and then it's like a cotton candy slushy.
Nice, nice, nice. Or maybe freeze them all the way and use them as ice cubes in some sort of fancy cocktail. I don't know. I'm telling you, I don't like it, V. Thank you for the thought, but I brought in a big bag of them and you can have them all.
Well, another thing you might not like is they were very expensive, probably.
Yeah, Brenda didn't tell me that. In fact, she kind of looked at me like she set him down and she goes, okay, Mr. Cotton Candy Grape guy.
I just spent $16 on this bag of grapes.
Exactly, and I know you've had these before, and I know you didn't like them then, and I'll bet you're not going to like them now. And I popped one of those bad boys in my mouth, and right away I knew that was a bad choice.
I just love Brenda's voice. Because I heard her say okay right when you were...
You knew that. You know that scene. A, she has a nice voice, but B, you know the knowing voice of a wife to a husband. Okay. Okay. Oh, you think so, but okay, mister. Here's those grapes you didn't like 5 years ago that you're probably not going to like again. I do not like them. We have a new news click. We post that every day at WGNradio.com. It's a daily web poll question about something in the news. And we post that on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. LF, what is the old news click, please? The one that we are exiting.
The Jason Van Dyke jury will include 7 whites, 3 Hispanics, 1 Asian American, and 1 African American. A. People are people. No red flags here. 54%. B. Red flags. Red flags. 46%.
Yeah, so we're about divided on that. You weren't here yesterday, Steve, but as we were deconstructing the jury as it was being built, I was saying that if I was Laquan McDonald's family and I looked into the jury box and saw none or 1 African-American, I would be unhappy. Now, the jury of your peers notion is something we afford to the defendant. And in this case, it's not Laquan or his family. It's Officer Jason Van Dyke. But that doesn't change the fact that his peers in Chicago, for every 12 people, include 3 African-Americans in the county of Cook. In Cook County, we are 25% African-American. They don't have to adhere to that per se, but I just think that it's problematic that there are not more blacks on the Van Dyke jury. So we'll see how that goes. A lot of you said, what are you saying? What are you saying, John? What are you saying? I'm just telling you that's the way I feel about it. We have a new news click today. Here's that.
Bill Daley, former Obama Chief of Staff, former U.S. Secretary of Commerce, son and brother to two former Chicago mayors, is running for Chicago mayor.
Yeah.
Great, I might vote for him. Or, I need to think this over. Or, not great, we've had enough dailies.
Yeah. You believe that? Three dailies? There's a fourth. We could get him. I don't know, Steve. I form affections for and, you know, whatever the opposite of that is for candidates for all the wrong reasons. I'm a sucker for a good TV commercial. I get very angry at a bad or deceitful TV commercial, which means I have nobody to vote for in the governor's race.
See, I like The Devil I Know more than The Devil I Don't.
Yeah.
And you know what you're going to get with The Daily. And you knew what you were going to get with Rahm Emanuel. So I was content.
So, you know, I'm looking at Bill Daly's resume. And dang, he's not just been sitting back. This guy's had a life. Born in Chicago, Illinois, the seventh and youngest child of the late Mayor Richard Daly and Eleanor Sis Daly. He's the brother of the former Illinois legislator John Daly and former Chicago Mayor Richard Daly, St. Ignatius grad, Loyola University, John Marshall Law School. I mean, perfect Chicago chops, right? And then look at his professional career. Amalgamated Bank of Chicago, Mayor Brown and Plata Law Firm. He was on the board of Fannie Mae. I would love to be on the board of Fannie Mae. I love the Turtles. Anyway, he went on to be U.S. Secretary of Commerce under President Clinton. He was Chief of Staff to Barack Obama. Yada, yada, yada.
He's more than just the Daily.
Right.
Son.
You're not just getting another guy riding the tail, the coattails of his brother or dad. I mean,
he's been hustling.
Yeah. All right. Fine. Make him the mayor. I don't care. I don't know what to, I don't
Okay,
know.
It's done.
He's going to be on our show on Friday or on Monday. Today's Friday. He'll be with us on Monday to talk about his candidacy. I guess he wasn't going to run if Rahm had stayed in the race, but Rahm's out, and now everybody's running. Speaking of...
I'd like to take this moment to throw my hat. Actually, I could throw your hat in the ring because you're a resident of the city.
That's right. I could be a legal qualified... Boy, I got to get a bunch of signatures, though.
Are you registered?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good.
Although I do not have a vehicle sticker yet.
Registered to vote or registered for something else?
So you're a scofflaw is what you're telling me.
Totally. That's going to blow up on the campaign.
You cannot run if you owe for a parking sticker.
I hope not. Take line two. This is Mike. You're on WGN. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hey, what do you say, guys? How you doing?
Good.
You were recently talking about the jury selection and the makeup of the jury and their nationality and such.
Yeah.
And you alluded to that there's only one African-American that's on the jury.
Of the 12, the alternates
correct.
Include some blacks, yeah.
Yeah. I guess the real question is how many were selected? How many of each nationality was selected and did it pass? We know there's a whole lot of people that didn't get accepted. How many of those were not accepted because of their bias? Or maybe they showed some, or for what reason? I don't know.
All of them. The people that, it's against the law to exclude somebody because of their race, but you can exclude somebody if they show a bias. The blacks that were excluded showed a bias.
Well, that's the real number to focus on, not how many were selected, is how many were selected for duty, but were not chosen because of their bias. Okay, you're looking at a very, very small percentage of the people that were pooled to be in the jury. What you're looking at is people that were acceptable to both sides. Okay, so if we're going to throw some numbers, let's throw some real numbers of how many American Native American Indians were part of that group. How many Asians? How many Russians? How many? I mean, we could go on and on and on and on. I mean, Chicago was a very, very diverse city.
It's kind of a silly argument. I'm sorry to disagree with you, but it's not the Native Americans or Asians who are the offended party in this case. So I don't think that quite applies.
There's two descriptors that matter
Steve,
in this
you
case.
You and I disagree on a lot of things, and of course, on the other end of the radio.
Well, hold on. But
I see things for what they are.
Fine. But
you see things as they present themselves. And that's the argument.
Okay, but I'm sorry. I think there's two variables here that matter. It's a racially charged case, I guess. I mean, that's the concern anyway. To be honest with you, I don't even see it that much in terms of race. I see it as a case of police brutality. Too often that's cops on blacks, although as often the cops are black as they are white. I mean, to me, in this case, it's just an instance of excessive use of force by the police, and it's on this young 17-year-old black teenager. But if it's a racial issue, it's white and it's black. It's not Native American or Russian. And I think that the race of the jurors matters. Now, of course, the first thing that matters is the person's ability to listen to the case and render a fair verdict, to do their best to be fair, to judge it intelligently. That's the man. And then color doesn't matter, right? That's, in a perfect world, it's only that. We're all colorblind. But I don't think we are. I think that the filter that everybody brings into a case where they're trying to be fair includes the color of their skin. And I think if you've only got one black on that jury, then I think it makes it a different jury than if it was 11 blacks and one white or one Asian. I think that is part of the equation. I don't think you should start there, but I think that does matter. So that's where I am on that one. I appreciate the phone call, Mike. Thanks for listening and seeing things as they are, or whatever it is you said you do. About an hour from now, we'll give you a list of some fun things to do in the city, our recommendations. The Bright Side of Life comes your way on Fridays. We'll start your weekend at 2:40 with that. 2:40, we do The Bright Side. And remember this, we're doing an encounter with Teddy Roosevelt and John Williams. That's me. In Elgin at the community college there. This is going to be November 10th at 10:30 in the morning. Whatever happens at the midterms, know that the Saturday afterwards, the greatest president in the history of the United States, don't tell Thomas Jefferson I said this, is going to walk onto the stage and you will believe. I'll talk to Teddy Roosevelt for a little while. He'll tell great stories and you will get a sense of what leadership is all about. Whatever you voted for in the midterm, whatever senator or congressman or mayor or whatever you're going to vote for, what you really want is good, competent, honest, and courageous leadership. And that was Teddy Roosevelt. And I'm telling you, you feel good about us and about him after that. And this is a guy that as often as anybody is compared to Donald Trump. There are differences, and he'll be happy to tell you what they are. So we talk about history and what it was like 100 years ago, and we talk about what it's like today. You get to ask questions. Where do you get your tickets? Go to WGNradio.com/events or call 847-622-0300. 847-622-0300. That's at Elgin Community College, WGNradio.com/events. Okay, it's 127, so I won't do it here. But afterwards, let me just update you on fear. We've posted another fun picture of me reading Bob Woodward's book, Fear, Trump in the White House. In 1 week's time, Steve, did you see how many copies of Fear they've sold? How many copies in 1 week?
Has he surpassed Omarosa?
I don't know if he has. She was number one on the New York Times bestseller list
last week.
But his book hadn't been released. And that she was number one doesn't mean that she, in fact, sold more than he did. We'll see where he enters the list this week. I can't imagine it won't be number one. They have sold 750,000 copies. They've sold 750,000 copies of this book. It was actually released Tuesday. As you may know, today is Friday. So in just a few days' time, they're closing in on a million sold.
There is irony that the president, I should say, has been great for the media when it comes to the bottom line, right?
I'm sorry, Steve, I missed that.
Well, I think subscriptions have gone up at a lot of newspapers around the country. Yeah. Online subscriptions have gone up.
Yeah.
And largely, you know, as a result of his administration, while he's the one ripping on them and calling them fake, they are actually increasing their readership.
Well, he likes to brag that if he ever steps out of office, you know, gets thrown out, or in 8 years he's no longer president, he said the New York Times will fold.
Well, I don't know if it'll fold, but it could suffer.
I think he's been good for business. Bad for democracy, but good for business. I mean, they got to admit that. Pete, you're on WGN Radio. What can we do for you?
Hey, John. Hey. I've been listening, and there was a guy, you know how you were talking about the ethnic background and the black and white and all that. I'm not into that. I'm just a normal guy.
Yeah.
But whatever happened when O.J. walked, I don't know what the jury pool was. We all know somebody did it. I can't say that he did because I don't know the facts.
Oh, I can.
Well, I can too, but I don't want to bias myself here.
Okay.
But what's to say there? I mean...
Well, the question is, does the race of jurors matter in racially charged cases? I think you are cuckoo bananas if you don't think it matters.
I think it does matter, and I think it should be balanced. I'm married to a ethnic person, and I've been married for 38 years. And I just think that society has to open up here and change and accept what's going on here.
I'm looking at...
Make the changes.
Thank you for the phone call. Thank you for the phone call, Pete. I'm glad you joined us. Elif just handed me a note. It says here, it's a graph. The O.J. Simpson trial jury, the demographic makeup. O.J. Simpson, the jury by education. You had 2 college grads, 9 high school grads, and 1 person who did not have a diploma. By sex, 10 women, 2 men. How about that? 10 women, 2 men. And by race, you had 1 Hispanic, 2 whites, and 9 blacks on the O.J. Simpson jury. Okay, Steve, so once in a while I've been dropping fear book reviews into the show and on my Facebook page.
Yes.
The Bob Woodward book. I'm 15 chapters in. Here's the latest installment. This book is not as crazy as I thought it would be, at least not yet. So far, it's fly-on-the-wall storytelling about things you generally know a little bit about. The anecdotes are great fun, of course. Interviewing candidates for National Security Advisor, for instance. Trump was presented with John Bolton, the former U.N. ambassador and Fox News commentator, a gig that paid Bolton $567,000 in 2017. Writes Woodward, his answers to Donald Trump were fine, but Trump did not like his big, bushy mustache. He didn't look the part. So he interviewed Army Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster, the war hero and scholar. Knowing it would impress Trump, Steve Bannon told McMaster to show up in uniform, thinking that would be inappropriate since he was going to retire. McMaster showed up in a suit instead. After McMaster left, Trump asked, "Who was that guy? He wrote a book, didn't he? I thought you said he was in the Army." "He is in the Army." "Well, he's dressed like a beer salesman," the president said. Bannon agreed. He thought McMaster's suit looked like it cost only $200, maybe $100. You know, it's funny because we're all guilty of the same crimes. We judge people by their cover. We say, that's not what that guy's supposed to look like. And they're no different, I guess, in the White House. There are endless critical pictures of the president in this book, but in several instances, this is the thing that surprised me, fear paints a sympathetic picture of Donald Trump. Woodward says, for instance, that South Korea agreed to renegotiate its U.S. trade deal after Trump threatened to stop funding their missile defense system. His hardball tactics worked. An unorthodox meeting with the Saudis turned out to be a good play. One New York Times story stating that the White House had asked the FBI to help out on the Russian front was in fact wrong. Woodward points that out in the book. And the president's claim that President Obama left him no good choices on North Korea are correct, Woodward says. You skip ahead, however, to the very last sentence of the book and you see Woodward's greatest truth. He writes the line that former Trump legal advisor John Dowd wanted to say but didn't. "You're a bleeping liar," to the president. He didn't say it, but that's how the book ends. But, you know, it's funny because everybody's talking about this book, and Lord knows folks are buying it and reading it. And I just thought it was just going to be a scandal sheet, one oh my God after another. And it's not. And here's one other takeaway, just about North Korea. They talk about how Obama just really didn't have a plan other than bide time. and that Donald Trump, we all know Barack Obama sat down with Donald Trump after Trump won the election. They were supposed to meet for 20 minutes. They sat there for an hour, which, you know, sounds like some sort of amazing thing. But I'm not that impressed that Barack Obama and Donald Trump talked about North Korea for an hour. I've talked about seedless grapes for an hour. So, yeah, I hope they've got an hour. But they were supposed to talk for 20 minutes. Anyway, in that famous conversation, Barack Obama told Donald Trump, listen, North Korea is going to be the biggest challenge. It's the hardest thing you'll have to do, and there's no easy way out. And the book talks about how the United States really doesn't have an easy path in North Korea. If you think Kim Jong-un is going to get some sort of nuclear weapon, then we could go in preemptively. We could strike. We could blow up places. Wow, would that be heavy-handed? Boy, would that be provocative. Who knows where that would go? But we could try and wipe them out right now. But in fact, they tell Barack Obama, the generals come back and they say, that wouldn't be complete. We wouldn't get them all. Maybe they've got small ones. Maybe they've got portable ones. Maybe they've got some hidden. We don't know what they have or where it all is. So that sort of tactic doesn't work. Another thing would be to tell China, to tell North Korea, that if they don't curtail their program, we will, and we mean business, something like that. Okay, what's that going to do? That's kind of where we are right now. And that there are millions of people living within miles of the DMZ, and that if you did provoke North Korea enough, they might just start launching conventional weapons into South Korea, and you would have millions killed that way. So how's that going to work for everybody? It's intractable. So that's what Barack Obama left Donald Trump. And if we don't, as a nation, seem to have a perfect policy about North Korea, that's part of the reason why. Okay, well, that's in the book. It's not, you know, just one crazy thing about Eric after another, although you do get some of that. We reached out to some folks in Oregon yesterday and today, and I'm not going to put any of them on, but the reason we did was because in Oregon, they are doing something that is at least being kicked around in the state of Illinois. In fact, it's part of the gubernatorial campaign messaging. This is the Rauner ad. Do I understand that correctly, Elif? This is a Rauner ad criticizing J.B. Pritzker's possible interest in a automobile use tax.
Buying a car, you pay a sales tax. Filling up, you pay a gas tax. But how would you feel about paying a tax just to drive? That's the plan J.B. Pritzker is considering. Charge a new tax per mile you drive in Illinois. Charging 1.5 cents per mile. Not only would they charge you just for driving, but they might even install a state GPS in your car to keep track of it.
Ooh.
Call your legislators. Tell them to oppose the mileage tax.
Ugh.
Coming November 2018.
Now give me your best one. Give me your best in a world, Elif.
In a world where there are no mileage taxes.
I was addressing a school assembly, Proviso West. I was doing a career day at Proviso West. I was on the stage in the auditorium, and there's several hundred kids out there. And I'm talking. I'm saying, you know, here's how you should, if you want a career in communications, you know, read books and do the best you can, that sort of thing. And now questions. And one kid steps up, and he says, you sound like the guy that does the TV commercials for movies. He said, would you say in a world for us? And I sure don't sound like that guy, but that's what the kid said. And nobody's ever said that to me. So I said, okay, in a world.
Mm-hmm.
And the place went bananas. The kids fell out of their chairs. They couldn't believe it. Those words were coming out of the mouth of somebody they were witnessing. It was the most incredible thing.
You did it the other day, and I was so impressed.
Oh, no kidding.
No kidding.
Because I don't have that voice. I'm not Orion Samuelson or the great Max Armstrong or whatever, or that guy.
Maybe like an interval lower would do you good.
Yeah, I know. Just one more step down the ladder.
But it's your passion when you say it.
In a world. Well, so I did that, and the kids all fell down. And then the teachers look around, and they look at me, and they go, really? How does that help, right? Because it was 5 minutes before we just settled everybody down, and then I started to talk again. And now, as I'm talking, all of the kids are going, in a world, in a world, in a world.
What did you expect? You should have declined.
I know.
No, you probably made their day.
Yeah. Okay, so we play that commercial for you because it's this dubious-sounding thing about how they want to put monitors on your car. So this is I just wonder, again, how you feel about this. What if instead of a 37-cent a gallon gas tax, we didn't charge you a gas tax, but we charged you however much you drive? If you don't drive much, then you're not paying the tax. Of course, if you don't drive much, you're not paying a gas tax because you're not buying gas. But it would seem to be fair. People who drive a lot will pay more. They're using the roads more. Right now, if you drive an electric car, you're not paying any gas tax. I go fill up my car. God, I did today. It was almost $50. And I drive a midsize SUV. It was almost $50 for gas. So if that was 12 gallons at 37 cents a gallon, Violetta, what is 12 times 37? How much did I buy in 12 gallons, 37? That's 54 and 37. So I just paid $4.25 in taxes today when I filled up the car. $4.25.
Yeah, that's what I got too.
But the person who goes by me and their little quiet electric car, they didn't pay any taxes today. So in Oregon, they had a voluntary program. They said, if you want to sign up for this, we'll put the monitor on your car and then we'll rebate you. We'll give you the money back at the end of the year or whenever. We'll give you the money back for the gas tax you paid and we'll just charge you per mile that you drive. One of the journalists at the Oregonian, wrote to us and said, the tax is still in its pilot phase, and I've heard anecdotally that users love it. Our Department of Transportation does too because tax revenues have been declining for years as cars become more fuel efficient, and raising the gas tax is usually a political non-starter. So a per-mile tax is the administrator's innovative and forward-looking approach. The concept, I'm sure, will be familiar to folks in Illinois where tolls are common. You use the infrastructure, you pay for the infrastructure. You know who was in Oregon and said he likes this idea and we should consider it at the federal level? The president. President Trump said this is something we should look into. As cars become more fuel efficient, as we use less gas, as we buy less gas, we have less money. Now, if you live in a rural area, and just to get anywhere, you've got to drive a lot, that's not good for you. To go to the store, you're going to pay more now than I am because I can walk to my grocery store or take the car trip for me to the grocery store is like 2 blocks. It's almost not worth it to park. Just skip it, I'll walk. Half the time I walk to the store. I kind of like this idea, but I also don't like this idea. Nobody likes change, and I am fully sensitive to people who are worried that this will be the government knowing where you are.
So that's a good, really good point about people who live in rural areas. I wonder what the average mileage, how it changes, if it is as different as you think it might be.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, right. So, I mean, I grew up with a lot of people in the country, and they lived 5 miles from town. So every time they would go to a store, there's 5 miles.
Yeah, right.
But they probably wouldn't go as often.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. So I wonder if they really do drive that much more than we think, or, you know, if you live in the suburbs, you drive to change the channel in your car because you're just comfortable in your car all the time. You're driving all the time. So you want to change the TV channel, you get in the car, drive around the block, go back, change the TV channel.
Well, it seems to me like the people in Manuka have a longer drive than the people
in... A drive
in...
to where, though? To the grocery store?
Okay, or to Joliet, or to the movie theater. Small towns just don't have the things that bigger towns do.
Right. No, I'm not arguing with you, but I'm just wondering about... I don't know.
How does it work out?
Yeah, right.
I don't know what the numbers are.
Because that's a really good argument against it, if all of a sudden, because of... where you live, you're paying more. That's not a fair thing. They'd have to come up with a way to fix that.
Here's a big problem, and you got to fix this too. Hey, Brian, you're on the air. Hold on, Brian. Go ahead, Brian. You're on the air.
A great day because it is beautiful out. I wanted to ask you, how do you think we should debt tax that they're talking about, the mileage tax, apply to, say, truckers that are just going through the state or they're making delivery of goods and that to the city or any place in Illinois for that matter, and drivers and visitors that come into the state? Do they have to pay the tax?
I don't know. They wouldn't have the transponders if they're out of state. We'd have no way of tracking that, and if we're not charging for gas, then they get away scot-free, don't they?
Well, you could argue that it's much easier if you don't ask these questions. But also, so you know, I drive through Indiana to pick up my kids from school or drop them off, or and often don't buy gas in Indiana. So I'm using the roads there without paying for it directly.
Without paying for them, And maybe you should, but if we're only transponding people, you wouldn't. You'd be skating free.
But my point is, a lot of people skate through Illinois anyway.
Right.
Well, but they pay a toll
if they're on a toll road.
Yeah. Well, you don't on 665 is not a toll, but yeah, you would pay it on
only if you're on 294. That's the only toll road.
8094 isn't that a toll?
Well, if you're in Indiana, yeah. But I'm just saying, if you're in Illinois, you could drive through Illinois. You could drive, you know, without having to pay to contribute. So that just naturally happens.
By the way, what is the toll on the Sky Bridge? What do you call it? The Skyway.
Skyway.
$750. It's a lot, I think. It's the fact that we have given up tolls and parking meters in Chicago is something I think about a lot, because I pay to park all the time in Chicago now, right? But it's usually just a couple bucks here, a couple bucks there. But you know, it adds up. And then back in my mind, I've been thinking, yeah, but at least this goes to the city, this goes to the city. And then I thought, oh, no, wait, this isn't going to the city. I think this is going to somebody in Finland or something. I need to take a break, Elif says, and you can all the phone lines are ringing and we have lots of texts. This is WGN. We're talking about another way to pay for the roads instead of a gas tax, a use tax, put a little monitor on your car. John, the government already knows where you are by your cell phone. Hey, John, I'm a snowbird. How does a mileage tax get collected from out-of-state cars and trucks?
That's another good question.
Well, as Steve Bertrand said, don't ask.
We'd really rather not ponder that.
815, it says, hey, John, I live 20 miles to town. Doesn't seem fair to us rural folks. John, no way about Woodward and Sandwich. I'm your number one fan in DeKalb. I've never heard this before. How do you know? I'm Googling now and striking out, but somebody told me about this yesterday, and I'm sticking with it. John, home care nurses and aides, good luck with your health care if you receive services at home.
Well, no, that would be a...
The nurses will resign if they have to drive.
No.
No, but I get that. I mean, so now to do the job, I got to, you know, I'm not going to drive out in the country and...
I bet the nurses already can write off their mileage that they use or their gas mileage that they use to drive there. That would be something a tax write-off, things like that.
A push, huh?
Sure.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Yep.
Here's John Williams.
But we do. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio overlooking beautiful downtown Chicago. Sky's blue. So is the water. Except for the river, that's green. We're here till 3 on Saturdays, 10 a.m. until 12 noon. On social media, I'm WGN King John. 1/2 hour from now, the bright side. You'll call in, tell us some good news in your world while you are smiling, and we will smile with you. On Fox News, it was last night or the night before, I noticed it today. Lou Dobbs, the commentator, was talking about the estimate of 3,000 people killed because of those hurricanes that hit Puerto Rico a year ago. The president said 3,000 people did not die because of the hurricanes in Puerto Rico when he left, and that was after the storm. It was a dozen or two. It wasn't that many people. These numbers are so fishy.
If a person died for any reason, like old age, just add them on to the list. Bad politics. I love Puerto Rico. The president, by the way, is right. The study the president alluded to is one produced last month by the Milken Institute at George Washington University. Almost a year later, the number went from 65 people killed to 2,975 people. The finding wasn't the result of a death toll count, a body count, nor a study of death certificates, but a public health study that subtracted the number of people who theoretically should have died over the same period from the number of people who were reported dead. After the report came out on August 28th, Puerto Rico's Democratic governor officially revised the death toll from 65 to the new estimate. Why not the Harvard study back in June that found deaths related to the hurricane fell within a narrow range? Are you ready? A narrow range from about 800 to more than 8,000 people. By the way, that's also an abstract and unconnected to any evidence estimate that even the liberal Washington Post found ludicrous.
So the president was right, and Lou Dobbs just incredulous. These numbers are crazy and all over the map. He referred to that Harvard study, and it dawned on us that when that study came out, we talked to one of the principal researchers of it, a guy named Dr. Sachit Balsari, who is a researcher at Harvard's FXB Center for Health and Human Rights. And he joins us again on WGN Radio. Doctor, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hi, John. Good to be back.
What's your reaction to the president's tweet and to what Lou Dobbs said on Fox News?
I think the data speaks for itself, and this is a fairly settled matter. We know that thousands of people continue to die after this storm, and our study shows that the majority of those deaths, at least one-third of them, were attributed to interrupted health care.
I do remember when you and I spoke, though, and the number was the way Lou Dobbs described it. There was 800 to several thousand, and if you picked a spot in the middle, it was 3,000 or 4,000.
Right.
And that's what you and I talked about last time, right?
Right. And so, because of the sample size of our survey and because mortality or death is not a frequent event, the confidence intervals, that is the range, was very wide. The more people you sample, the more precision one would get. But this was a survey that was done very quickly because at that point the government had not released the death records. And there was all this controversy in the media about what the deaths were. And therefore we employed what is a fairly standard practice in disasters when other registry data are not available, which is household-based surveys.
I see. Well, so you did the survey and then extrapolated a number, but since mm-hmm. then, are the numbers better? It's not just an extrapolation from a limited survey, but
they all seem to coincide. I mean, the GW number is very much within our confidence interval. They have looked at the actual number of deaths based on the records that they have access to, and subtracted it from what the baseline should be around that time of the year, and they come up with this number that's close to 3,000. We've done additional analysis with these data that have since then been publicly available, and we've, again, as we have in the past, posted those online. So the senior statistician on our team, Dr. Rafa Rizzari, has done additional work. It is easily searchable online. There are links to it from our website that continue to show these sustained high deaths.
So we're talking about 3,000 more deaths over a six-month period. Is that right?
I don't know at what point the GW study stops counting, but it is several months after Hurricane Maria.
And the point was that here's how many people would normally die in that time frame. Here's how many people died. And the president says, well, look, if somebody dies in that time frame from old age mm-hmm. or they get hit by a car, then you add them to the list. And that seems to be inappropriate.
Well, GW has not commented on how they died. All they're saying is that we had all these excess deaths beyond the baseline that seemed to be outside of the range of normal fluctuation. We all know that not exactly the same number of people die every year, but this is a lot more than was expected, and that is all they're reporting at this point.
So what was it then? So you're right, maybe somebody did get hit by a car, was going to die of old age, but whatever it is, something mm-hmm. happened to cause 3,000 more people to die than normally would have in the same time frame. So then you say, what is it? Oh, we had a hurricane. Well, then what happened as a result of the hurricane to cause these people to die? Was it lack of access to water or what?
So based on our study, which was, you know, a couple of months prior to GW. So based on the data available then and our sample size, it looked like it was one-third of at least one-third of those deaths were because of interrupted access to health care. So, you know, you didn't have electricity and so didn't have access to your breathing machine or couldn't get to the dialysis center. There was road access issue or the center was closed or the healthcare providers were not able to reach there. We all know that there was prolonged loss of electricity, water, and cell phone coverage in Puerto Rico for several months. The GW study, I believe, is going to also look into the individual causes of death, and there might be additional information, but those questions are better directed to that team.
Yeah. I don't know. It just kind of makes me sad to see the government take science and throw it out the window, or math in your case. This conversation you and I have is barely at my level to understand, and maybe some people are listening to this going, you know, what, whatever, yada, yada, yada. They don't get it. They don't understand it. This is boring to them, and it sounds suspect, especially when the president wants to just throw it out because it's not good for him. I just wonder what your comment is on that sort of culture that we have right now.
Well, I think it's important more so to let science and the numbers and facts speak for themselves and hope that people are discerning enough to come to their own conclusions.
And your conclusion is what?
That we will continue to see increased wind and water storms around the world, certainly in the United States, and that the Puerto Rico data show that our communities might be very unprepared, especially for the longer-term impacts of these kinds of storms if infrastructure is disrupted, because we as a society are more dependent on these infrastructural services.
Sure. Well, that's what FEMA said, that they just weren't prepared. I mean, whatever the president wants to believe, even his own federal emergency management people said, we dropped the ball on this one. The president said, though, that they didn't have electricity there to begin with. They did, but they didn't have a confident grid. And when that got knocked out for several months, that was the problem. But that was their fault. They need to have better electricity. Okay, I see that as half true. But also, isn't it the job of the federal emergency management people or the government of the United States to be up to the task? If that's the challenge, then maybe you ought to say, okay, that's the challenge. And how are we going to be better than that? And by 3,000 lives, we were not. Yeah, this sounds like a political statement, I'm sure, to you, but I wonder if you would at least grant that the president has a point there, that those people were living on the margin anyway, and that it wasn't our lack of preparation, but their own, you know, poor infrastructure.
Well, vulnerable people deserve even more protection. So if we identify groups of people in the United States that are likely at more risk to the same hazards as other people because of poor infrastructure at baseline or the access to services or not that they otherwise have, I think it is even more important for the government agencies responsible for their protection to be doubly prepared.
You folks at Harvard over there, is this a liberal organization I'm talking to? Do you have a political axe to grind here, Doctor?
Absolutely not. Science is politically neutral. I can assure you that Harvard has its share of thinkers, researchers, and students across the political spectrum.
Dr. Satya Balsari is a researcher at the Harvard FXB Center for Health and Human Rights. It's nice to talk to you again, Doctor. Keep doing what you do over there. I appreciate your time and explanation.
Thank you very much, John. Bye.
Have a good day. This is Alice Mellett. She is in, I think, Wilmington. Hey, Alice, it's John Williams. You're on WGN Radio in Chicago. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Now, I know you've been moving about a little bit with the storm. Do you live in Wilmington? Are you in Wilmington right now? Tell me about yourself.
Yes to both. I live here. I've been here a year. And I'm there now.
So
here for the storm.
What's the weather like even as we speak? At this moment out the window, what are you seeing?
Right out the window, I see white skies, a lot of rain, some big breezes, some gusts, a lot of downed trees, to be honest. a lot of uprooted trees. But ground got saturated really quickly. It looks like we got about 20 inches in 24 hours.
How far are you from the coast?
I am about 10 miles from the coast and about 2 miles from the Cape Fear River.
Yeah, I've heard about that river. That's the thing that flooded its banks, and a lot of the flooding inland is because of that. Is the water near the door where you are now?
Not anywhere close. There's hardly any puddling where I am. I am up by the Cape Fear Country Club in a neighborhood that's elevated. We're 46 feet above sea level. But even down closer to the river downtown where my home is, I'm just one block from the river, and it's 33 feet above sea level because there's a rising road straight up from the river that goes from basically sea level to 33 feet very quickly.
Yeah. So
what you see on television is some water that's coming over the banks at the Riverwalk, but as soon as you get up to the next block, you don't have any flooding.
I presume you've been watching the television networks and watching their coverage out your door?
Absolutely.
What do you think of that? Are they portraying the picture correctly? Are they overselling it? Are they underselling it? What's your assessment?
You know, it's always going to be who you ask. For me, I have experience with hurricanes, being from New Orleans and Galveston, and it depends where you live. So for my friends who live at the beach, this was not overselling at all. For my friends who live inland, maybe it was.
Yeah.
Some of the subdivisions afterwards, I dare say, may look like Houston after Harvey. But for some of these higher areas, like the one I'm in right now, we just look like we've had a bad storm and a lot of trees down.
Well, that's interesting, though, to me. I mean, so you're in Wilmington. You're 10 miles inland, and granted, you're 30 feet up. But there's no, I mean, literally, as we're talking right now, I'm watching, I have a TV monitor here, and they've got one of those reporters who's bracing against the wind as he's getting whipped about, and that's the reality of where he is, but I wonder if it's the reality for most people, you know?
Well, I can't say most or not most,
yeah.
But those big winds certainly came through. I mean, that's what took the trees down.
Yeah.
Most of us aren't standing out in it, thankfully.
Yeah.
And some of what you're seeing right now may be up the road where it's hitting now.
Well, are you
I know that it did hit that way. I had a friend out there reporting from the beach yesterday, and the minute it hit, he was bracing himself as well, and that's legit.
Yeah.
For the time it lasts, it's just not continuous.
Well, is there any? Is there any consolation in that it sort of downgraded to a 2 or a 1 now? I mean,
Sure.
You were in a previous hurricane, right? Which was the one that beat you about in Galveston?
Yeah, it was 10 years to the day. I was in Galveston. It was Hurricane Ike. You may not have heard much about it because it was the same week that Lehman Brothers declared bankruptcy. So we kind of left the news cycle early.
Yeah.
But it was a bad one, and I did evacuate for that, and it was 67 days before I could come back. So that's an issue, too. It's hard to let everything rot and mold while you're waiting to get back in.
Mm. Well, okay, I guess... Now you've just kind of got to wait it out. It's still raining, and you say, but it looks like a hard rain, like we're all used to. Although you've had to endure more than that. When do you get back to your house? Do you know?
I don't know. It depends how long this rain goes on. The trees are going to be dangerous for a while, and we're just on the other side of the eye now. So we probably have at least 6 or 8 more hours of this. If not, and if it stalls, we could have much more than that. I'm happy to report that I did, just before we got on the phone, got some pictures from a neighbor who went to my house and took pictures. And again, apart from a piece of downed fence and some tree limbs, it all looks good. And so for a 1901 house with all of its original windows, they're still intact. Pretty cool.
Wow. Good for you. Good for the house.
Yeah.
In fact, tomorrow I want to interview the house. But in the meantime, I'll call you again down the road. Alice, good luck to you all over there. If there's anything we in Chicago can do for you, let us know. But in the meantime, best to you, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much, John.
Friend of a friend, Alice Mellitz in Wilmington. Thank you, Steve. Fridays, we like to give you some fun things to do. We always start with a musical suggestion. Producer Elif is monitoring that. What are we listening to here?
We're listening to Beck. He's going to be playing Riot Fest tomorrow at 8:45. And there are tons of great stars on stage this weekend. Interpol, Elvis Costello, Blondie, a bunch of awesome Weezer. Pull it out with the dark sunglasses. Walking crooked down the
beach. She spits in the sand where the boats are bleaching. I don't go to a lot of concerts. I'm not a big music guy. I would pay good money to go see Beck. I think that would be so much fun.
So would I.
Who's cooler than Beck? Violetta strolled into Studio D. All right, let's do some more suggestions. V, go. Standby, go.
If you're ready to get into the fall spirit, Fulton Harvest Fest is going on. That's today through Sunday. There's best chefs, beer, music. That's at Fulton and Halsted. Tickets are about $30 to $50, and you can find them at FultonMarketHarvestFest.com.
Speaking of fest, the 15th annual Turkish Fest.
Woo-hoo!
Daily.
Represent.
Can we get a Turk in the house?
Represent.
Represent Turkey. So the 15th annual Turkish Festival at Daily Plaza through tomorrow at 6 p.m. Daily Plaza, downtown Chicago.
And if you're not ready to let go of summer, Rosé Fest is going on at the beach. That's going to be on North Avenue. It's $40 to $50 at the Shore Club there. That is tomorrow, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. And tickets are at Eventbrite.com.
How much fun does this sound? A Lebowski Fest movie party, Lincoln Park Zoo, tomorrow, 6:30 to 10:30 in the evening. $20 general admission. Details at lpzoo.org. That's the Lincoln Park Lebowski Fest.
The Big Lebowski. Sam Adams Lakeview Taco Fest is going on at Southport between Addison and Roscoe. That is Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Suggest a donation of $10, but it sounds like a lot of fun.
Printers Row Art Fest is tomorrow and Sunday, 10 to 5 on Printers Row. That's 47 West Polk. It's free. You can get more information at AMDUR, amdurproductions.com. Printers Row Art Fest. Tomorrow and Sunday.
There's a bunch of different concerts going on. Maroon 5 is going to be at the United Center tonight. Tickets are still ranging from $45 to $250. You can find those basically everywhere. Ravinia has the Gypsy Kings tonight. Tomorrow night, they have Johnny Rivers, and then they're closing up the festival with Fiesta Ravinia Los Trigos del Norte class.
Ooh, your accent is perfect.
I'm going to guess that's not your native tongue there, V.
I don't even know what tongue that is.
I believe it was Spanish, wasn't it?
I think it's Mexican festival.
I think it's Portuguese.
Yeah.
No. And then Dispatch closes out the concert at Northerly Island on Sunday night.
What's a better place to see a concert than Northerly Island? On a good night.
So nice.
Although Grant Park for Lollapalooza is fun, too. What would you say? Best place outdoors to watch a concert in the city is? Where would you go to if you could get your band anywhere?
Recently, I loved Mambi on the Beach at Oakwood Beach.
Oakwood Beach?
South.
Yeah, okay. I guess everybody's got their favorites.
Yeah, you
got
to be ready for like sand and the beach then.
By the way, speaking of United Center, you did a moment ago. Blackhawks training camp is there tomorrow. I'm going to broadcast there from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Tickets are $5. It's really a fun festival. And then you go inside and you watch the Blackhawks practice. ChicagoBlackhawks.com. ChicagoBlackhawks.com. Listen for and look for me tomorrow at the UC.
Oh, yeah, you're going to be there.
By the way, let me also throw this in. Cubs are in town versus the Reds. 7:05 tonight. It says you can get tickets for $27. I think you actually can get some walk-up. Anything else you got for us?
That's pretty much it. There's Shrimp Fest going on. So if Kevin's listening, he's a big shrimp fan.
Yeah, and amazing weather. That's the other thing.
Oh, it's going to be nice.
Well, that's the bright side. Okay, here's your chance to call now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Call us right now. We do this on Fridays if you're new to this segment. And just tell us something that's making you smile. It can be big. It can be small. We cherish life's little happinesses. But if your son or daughter are coming home from Afghanistan or somebody beat cancer, I'll take that too. What's your good news? It's the bright side. Call me now. Time for the bright side.
Some things in life are bad.
Sponsored by.
They can really make you mad.
Joint Relief Institute.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
Thank you, JRI.
When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble. Give a whistle.
Kevin, are you going to whistle?
Yes, sir.
Here we go now. First, sing at home if you know these words.
Oh, always look on the bright side.
Let's
of
go
life.
To the sports department. Thank you.
Always look on the light side of life.
Do you guys mind if I go first? Sometimes I don't go at all.
No, you should.
My bright side is I've been thinking this a lot of days. When I walk from the train to the radio station, I go past a dumpy little part of town with low-hung buildings and franchise stores, and there's a 7-Eleven there, and it's not a real pretty corner. And they've got a speaker attached on the outside that's always playing classical music really loud.
Yeah.
And it's the most incongruous thing, but I think that's this little store on a dirty corner downtown that's nondescript saying, I'm going to put some beauty in the world. And they pump out of the 7-Eleven on a speaker classical music all day long. It's the most interesting and I think positive, lovely thing. For
that's
me,
beautiful.
It's a bright side. How about you, Ms. Garris? What's your bright side?
Beautiful weather, and I'm going to go see the Turkish festival tomorrow with my family.
Over the chances.
Yeah, what the heck.
Have a good time. How about you?
Me and my sister have been doing a staycation. We've brunched 2 days in a row at different hotels, like we pretend we're staying there, and it's been a lot of fun.
Somebody told me the brunch at Smokehouse Daddy.
Smoke Daddy.
Mm-hmm. Is fan-flipping-tastic.
I haven't been. Maybe I'll go.
Oh, my God. They were describing it to me, and they said that you get this ball of bread, cinnamon, sugars, one of those things. And then you get a plate of sausage and bacon that they keep bringing out. If you get the brunch, they said it was just fantastic.
That sounds amazing.
I know. And then you got to order something, too, which maybe you don't even need to. Hey, Kev, why are you smiling? Speaking of food, Kevin, why are you smiling in there?
First home game for my Hersey Huskies. They started the season with 3 road victories, undefeated. They face undefeated Maine West tonight at Hersey. Let's go, Huskies.
Forget about your seat.
Let's pick up some phone lines. George, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, George? What's your bright side?
I'm smiling, John, because the great balladeer Gordon Lightfoot's going to be at the Copernicus Center on Sunday. First concert I've been to in years.
Always look on the right side.
Hey, Bill, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling today, Bill? Hey, Bill.
John,
yes.
I'm smiling because yesterday was my 35th anniversary for no cigarettes, no alcohol, and no narcotics. And tomorrow is my 40th class reunion for high school, and it's going to be a beautiful outdoor event.
They won't recognize you.
Oh, they will, because my hair's almost as long as it was back then, so I'm the one that still has all his hair. Ha ha.
You can text to 312-981-7200.
708 says apple picking season is here, and another 708 going to their first national car show Sunday in Joliet at Chicagoland Speedway.
Hey, Denise, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Denise?
Our daughter just got a new job. She's moving from Orlando, Florida, down to Las Vegas, Nevada.
Have a great trip for her. Thanks for the call. I love it when kids and people get jobs. Hey, Carl, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling today, Carl?
Hey, John, how you doing? Hey, John, besides this great weather, I'm going to see Andre Rieu on Sunday at Upstate Arena. Hey, John, you like scary movies?
Yeah.
Go see The Nun. It'll scare you.
Oh, my God. Thanks for the phone call. I posted the trailer to that. We were at a movie, and The Nun trailer came on, and you go, all right, this is a scary movie. And people jumped out of their seats.
I can't even watch scary trailers.
Oh, my God. Does that look hilariously scary or scarily hilarious? Not hilarious, but, boy, we were laughing. They got us.
I don't get that. It's scary.
This is line 6. Go, Sandy. You're on WGN.
Hi, John. I'm calling to tell you that we, over Labor Day weekend, we took our grandkids to the State Fair in Minnesota, and it was so much fun.
It's the great Minnesota get-together. That is the best state fair in the country.
It is. And I have to tell you, we took the two oldest grandkids, who also live in Minnesota, to the Illinois State Fair, so we had a good comparison of both.
Thanks for the phone call. I'm glad you enjoyed that. What do you got, V?
630 says they're going to see Buddy Guy in St. Charles tonight. And another 630, their prostate cancer numbers have dropped. Life is so good.
Hey, Tom, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Tom? Hey, Tommy.
Well, my wife Donna has Alzheimer's, and although she's afflicted with this terrible disease, she still knows me. She's still at home. She still loves me, and we're together forever.
Okay, buddy boy. What a nice call. You're a good man, Tom. I wish you both the best.
Thank you.
On that note, 815 celebrating 36 years of wedding bliss.
Hey, Todd, this is on line 8. You're on WGN. Todd, why are you smiling today?
Hey, guys. I was 3 days old when I was adopted back in the late 50s and did one of those DNA tests, and I found my biological father, an aunt, an uncle, two half-brothers, a whole bunch of cousins, and a bunch of them live not even 15 minutes from me.
Isn't that all this time, and they're just down the road, huh?
Yeah, pretty amazing stuff, yeah. Yep, so that's making me smile, David, John.
Always look on the right side.
All right, Violetta, go.
630, might not seem like a bright side, but I get to run a 20-mile tomorrow with my mom. And I'm smiling because I got a churro sandwich from Cinnabon.
They have churro sandwiches at Cinnabon?
I guess they do.
Cinnabon is the best food in the world. Cinnabon is my favorite.
See, I say it wrong.
Food.
I say Cinnabon.
I think it's Bon.
Yeah, well.
Hey, Dale, you're
tomato,
on.
Tomato, tomato.
You're on WGN. Dale, what's the good news in your world?
Hey, John. I lead a very busy life, and tonight I get to go on a date with my beautiful girlfriend, Kathy. Just the two of us.
Yeah. Friday is here. It's a beautiful night. Have a great time, my friend.
Thank you very much.
All right, one more. What have you got?
630 says, my mother-in-law is moving to Arizona tomorrow. Ouch.
There's only one rule on the bright side. This is the only rule on the bright side. We do not judge other people's happiness. If their bright side is that their mother-in-law is moving halfway across the country, let them have it.
Always look on the bright side.
Hey, Judy, you're on WGN. I think you're on WGN. Hey, Judy, are you there? Hold on a second. We'll get to Judy. Let's go to Rich. Hey, Rich, you're on the air. What's your bright side?
My bright side is... Hi, John, anyway. My bright side is I just celebrated my 85th birthday, and I'm still on the green side.
Yay!
Yeah, that's the right side to be on, Rich.
You betcha.
Happy day to you, sir. Thanks for the call. All right, any more?
My son's moving back from Pennsylvania. He's been gone for 5 years.
That's the thing. There we go. Always look on the bright side of life. We do that on Fridays. We ask you to call in, tell us some good news in your world. You can text it in too. We'll do that group hug on the radio that works every single time. What's Rokan talking about with Anna DeVlantis? They're right around the corner. Anna DeVlantis is turning some pages over there.
Can you hear
that's
it?
Me.
That's actually Ro. We got a lot of paperwork over here.
Yeah, we got some.
You hear that?
I'm fining you for the Shirley joke. The Zez brothers would like their money back
On
that. See, I've got, you know, we're going to have a meeting after the show. John, we have to talk a few things.
What did I do wrong? Steal a joke?
Don't worry about it. We got other things.
I love meetings, said no one. Ever. Ever.
Here's the thing. If you are a person doing a meeting, go make it short. Everything that has ever been done in a meeting that I have been to could have been done in a 15-minute meeting.
You cut it in half.
Meetings
the general
are, meetings
rule.
Are worthless, in
general
my opinion.
Rule.
Cut it in a fourth.
You know what I really dislike?
Speeches, too, by the way.
Yes. Yes.
I dislike meetings about meetings. It is my least favorite thing. And it happens. And I don't know why it happens. We're having a meeting. What is it about? It's about next week's meeting. I'll go, all right, well, I would like to know why we just don't have this conversation in next week's meeting. Well, we have to prepare for next week's meeting.
Right.
Well, we could do it. Just tell me what I need to prepare for. I'll do it. I'll see you next week.
And here's the thing that, God, I shouldn't say this on the radio, because I go to meetings where there's a lot of chatting and catching up, and everybody's so nice and friendly, and I like all these people.
Sure.
And I want to be nice and friendly to them, but I don't want to do that sitting in a circle. You know, I just want to, like, let's do what we got to do, and then we'll have this happy talk later. I just want to do the topic.
I know the feeling.
Me too.
I know the feeling.
And then
right,
I look like a stick in the mud. It's like, oh, what's your problem?
How's everybody? No. I don't care how everybody is.
That's true, Ro.
I'll tell you how I am. Rushed for time. That's how I am.
Feeling high anxiety over here, right?
So, yeah. All right, what do you got for us today, Mr.
Oh, man, lots of stuff here. Michael Steele, Man of Steel, is going to be with us. We've got Mike Monaco on the Paul Manafort cooperation plea deal. And the verbiage keeps getting worse every hour for the White House. Because it's about this, because it was like Paul Manafort pleaded so that he could talk about everything, all things and everything, everything and all things. And you're like, wait, what does that mean? So we'll find out. And I mean, if he doesn't have anything, he doesn't have anything. But would they cut him a deal if he didn't have anything? His lawyers had to assume that he had something. Mike Monaco will explain that. Mike Flannery, Mikes are wild here. Everybody here is named Mike on this show.
Lots of Mikes.
Except for Tom Skilling. Mike Flannery is going to tell us about Bill Daley. He's going to announce for mayor on Monday, and I understand that Mr. Daley is going to, what do we have to call him here? Because he was a chief of staff, commerce secretary Daley, is going to be appearing on your show, John, I believe, and
Monday,
on
yes.
our show as well, a couple hours after that, and it's going to be very interesting, because he walks into a very crowded field, but does he become an automatic front runner?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll find out about that. And then we got
another Mike actually down there. You see the Carnival wagon.
A guy named
Mike.
Michael, but he misspells he spells his name differently than the other Michaels.
Mm-hmm. So M-Y.
A Carnival wagon. This could be on the stream, by the way. The Carnival wagon and live music. Plus, Mr. Roper tells us who's going to win the Emmy. So if you're in a pool or you like to bet on this, it's all going to be
him. Is that Michael Roper that's going to do that?
Michael Roper is going to be doing it. Michael Devlantis is going to be with me. And
Michaela.
And Michael.
Yes.
It's
exactly.
Actually Michael Judy Pilak, because you have the three names in a situation like this, is going to do the news right here.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Mike.